Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlossophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlossophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Van Weven. Alongside me, as always, is the host with the most, and I mean that in every sense of the way, Mr. Spencer Williams.
That's right, I'm still here.
why did that sound like an Adventure Time villain or something? Speaking of villain, we also got with us intern manager, managing intern Amy.
I am not the villain. We're gonna prove that.
Hey,
I am not
you have to be a bit of a villain to corral all the interns.
I just need to speak softly and carry a big stick.
That's what a villain does. Have you not seen the stories? Anyway, we are in full swing of the holiday season as we dive into the most recent Disney animated studio film drop this month, and that is Zootopia 2. So stick around as we dive into that and get into the nitty gritty, especially about all the goodness about the characters, the growth, and stuff.
I don't know where your review's going tonight.
I was going to give something away, but then I'm like, we'll wait. But before we do, speaking of which, Spencer, why don't you give us them opening credits?
Tune into brand new episodes each and every week.
Week.
On all your favorite streaming platforms and over our website at filmlossophers.com. Also, connect with us on the social pages at facebook.com/filmlossophers and on Twitter, Instagram, and Threads at filmlossophy101. Also, we're on Blue Sky at Filmlossophers Podcast.
That's right. You can check us out over at our website at filmlossophers.com. There we got allegedly over 300 episodes, everything from action, anime, comedy, suspense, thrills, and chills. If you're looking for it, we got it. Head on over to our website at filmlossophers.com. You can also check us out wherever we are, wherever podcasts are streaming, and that's iTunes, Libsyn, Player FM, Audio Boom, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn, iHeart, Amazon Music, and I think that's it. All right, I think that's all of them.
There are no other services that we recognize on this podcast.
We're in Audible.
Yeah,
Audible. Audible, but that's part of Amazon Music.
You can check us out there. Check us out, listen to us, subscribe, follow, give us a 5-star review. We've earned it.
We have.
Yes, and we'll give you the social links at the end of the episode. Oh, man, it has been a doozy. Jumping into the month of December has been one of those types of expeditions where you kind of go from preparing for the feasts of Thanksgiving into the holiday throes of chaos and shopping and everything that the Jim Carrey Grinch movie taught us not to focus on is what's going on right now. So
we're in Whoville mode.
We're in Whoville
mode. Woof.
Spencer's looking at us.
I don't know what that means because for the Who's.
Are we Who's? We're not Who's.
We're not? We're up on Mount Crumpet?
You are the Grinch of Halloween, so.
That's not this holiday, sir.
No, but.
Wait, are you a Who?
I'm down here lightly singing Dalvu Dorage.
Ooh.
There you
Welcome
go.
Welcome Christmas come this way? Okay, you heard it. Spencer needs more Who.
Lightly.
But in spite of all that wonderful Christmas cheer that's in lieu and going on as far as retail therapy and whatnot, before we dive into any of all that stuff, we have another edition of Amy's Streaming is for Lovers. Apparently, she's got two more pitches for us today, Spence, that's Ooh. Supposed to knock our socks off.
And I'm going to try to do it better. I promise. I know last time you guys were like, what? What is this?
Well, I feel like also some of the movies are just literally going to be that.
Some of these are going
to
be.
Which, by the way, I think it's the intern's job to be keeping track of what movies we're supposed to be watching.
I was actually going to bring that up, but then I was like, I'll do that.
Because I believe.
Wait, we're supposed to be watching?
Because, I thought the whole idea is that.
Yeah, you guys want to watch the naked With Marlon Wayans on Netflix. That's the only one you've agreed to so far.
Yeah, but you're supposed to kind of hold us accountable to watch it with you.
I am holding you accountable. I haven't decided when we're going to do this and if it's going to turn into a Love Actually sequence again and we're going to do like two of them back to back.
Oh my gosh.
It'll be amazing. Okay. I'm so excited. Okay, so the first one that we're bringing up today is called Catching Feelings. It's from 2017.
Okay.
And the first thing that I wanted to put out there before I give you your pitch is that it is from a South African director and it is also based in South Africa.
Oh.
So how do you guys feel about an intellectual professor, very gorgeous wife who is very successful, and he is certain that...
I'm already bored with this movie.
Yeah, this is the problem. This one was really hard to sell because watching it, he's an intellectual with a hot wife and there's like a renowned author that comes in. He's an English professor as well, who comes to Johannesburg. He's like, I hate that guy. And suddenly the author's like, hey, I really like you. You want to hang out? And he's like, yeah, let's hang out. Let's do whatever you want to do. And the old writer guy is like a straight up hedonist and likes to do sketchy things. And our protagonist is like, yeah, we could do whatever. And then he starts getting super suspicious about his wife might be sleeping with the old writer.
This is supposed to be a rom-com?
Yeah.
It doesn't sound like it. I mean, I don't know what kind of movies they make in South Africa, but
as a romantic comedy,
they have a real difficult life. So I'm pretty sure even this is like, this brings joy. Like, I feel like that's kind of the sentiment we're getting here because that sounds dark.
I literally put in my original notes that I'm like, this is not a romantic comedy.
No.
I'm like, why did you label it as a romantic comedy?
Maybe
Netflix?
That's what romance is over there, okay. Which is sad.
So I guess
hold on. I'm sorry. Netflix did this?
Netflix.
Okay, then that changes a lot.
No. But also keep in mind, you said this was 2017.
Correct.
This was around the time when they were just throwing things out to just test the waters.
That's how we ended up with Marlon Wayans in that time.
Okay, yeah, this probably says more about Netflix than anything.
Yeah, they were doing that whole global, like, oh, we're offering opportunities for everybody.
Which there is when it comes to cinematography, this is really nice. However, this story more so has questions.
I mean, you could be on the edge of like a beautiful cliffside and whatever and be taking a poop, and I wouldn't say it's a beautiful picture. You know, I'm just saying, just
why
because
are you watching
it's in
people poop.
We have a dog. So like, what else am I?
Wait, why are you watching the dog poop?
To make sure he's pooping in the right place.
He's just staring you down.
I'm staring him down. Excuse me.
Uncomfortable.
You're like, you're going to poop and you're going to do it now.
No, that's
awesome. Yeah. So, okay. So here's the thing. Right now you're not selling this. I just got to say,
I didn't really want to sell this one of the two, to be honest.
Well, then you should have picked another one.
I didn't finish my fifth one. I've been busy.
You know what's sad is you had me at South African. I'm like, ooh, yeah, foreign movie.
Because here's the thing. I went and found a whole bunch of different ones where I looked for different countries, different directors. Like I was like, I will try anything and everything because Netflix, as soon as you say, hey, it's made by Netflix.
Did you look in the land of Rotten Tomatoes to see if it was worth watching?
Here's the thing. I didn't look up any of their scores first. I came and literally was like, Netflix, show me your list of romantic comedies. And I will go in sight unseen, taking on the premise of it. And I was like, so maybe this one's going to be okay.
You know, it's funny because like I've been building a movie server of my own movies.
Yeah.
And it pulls data from Rotten Tomatoes so that you can see.
You're smarter than me on that.
See, here's the thing. Yes, you don't have to base it on the score, but you should base it on what the majority of what people are saying, especially the audience portion, because obviously with rom-coms, they're never really always going to land with critics, and that's just the way it goes. Critics know better when it comes to...
Yeah, well, this had a 5.7 out of 10 on... It's 100% on Rotten Tomatoes and a 5.7 out of 10 on IMDb.
100% on Rotten Tomatoes.
100%.
How many people reviewed it? One person reviewed it, then of course...
100%. Six.
Six people.
By the way... No, it gets better.
And they agreed.
That six is all from critics.
My dear.
Popcorn score is 58.
Yeah, that's more accurate. If you're looking at from 2017, you're looking at an opportunity where you can write down in your publication that you reviewed a South African movie and give it a good review with the possibility of conversations and interviews and all that. You're going to give it a good review. Plain and simple. Let me guess. All of the people who reviewed it, it is right down the middle as far as like three well-known publications and three really small publications.
So we have two so far. Awardscircuit.com.
Nope. Don't know that.
City Press from South Africa.
Nope.
The Daily Dot.
Nope. Don't know
Decider.
That. Nope.
Independent Online from South Africa.
Nope.
Shadow and Act.
No, no. Yeah, okay, so all nobodies. All people who are not.
We don't know about the guys from South Africa. We can't.
All people who don't have widely known publications. Mm-hmm. So
also saying, the director was
so
star.
coming at this.
And he wrote it.
This is like got the makings of like an ooey bowl kind of thing. Oof.
No, be careful, Eddie. He might issue you a challenge.
He's already banned. He blocked me once before on Twitter.
I forgot about that.
I don't even care at this point. Like, okay, I'm just gonna call like time of death. You know, I'm out on this one. It just does not. It doesn't even give me like an inkling of like, okay, maybe there's some kind of mischievous way around enjoying this. Now, this just doesn't scream.
See, like, and even the overview. So the overview what got me. The lives of formerly famous writer and his wife are disrupted when a famous and very self-indulgent author comes to stay with them. And I was like, okay.
Yeah, but if you saw the movie, you're going to know. No. If you saw the movie, you're going to know more of the ebbs and flows. That's like saying, hey.
This is how we got real crunk when we watched Love Actually. So it's me knowing this.
It's a no for me. What about you, Spencer?
No.
Okay.
That's okay.
Let's move on to the next one.
Okay. Second one. We're taking it to 2025. So I wanted to give you kind of a flop on this one. So we're going to start off. This has the daughter from Colorado Space. I think her.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So her. We've got Miranda Cosgrove.
Okay.
Give it a moment. And we've got the little girl from the game change, the game plan with The Rock, where he was the dad, the football dad, and she was the daughter.
I do vaguely remember that.
Yeah, she was tiny. She's big now. Okay. So how do you feel about a struggling artist in Texas, of course, who all she wants to do is go to Paris? She wants to attend school, art school in Paris.
Emily in Paris type
thing. No. It's not Emily in Paris, which I did like that show, but that's a different thing. That's a TV show, Spencer. All she wants to do is go to Paris, and she's been accepted to the art school, but she can't afford it. So her sister devises a plan to get her on a bachelor-esque type show. Mm. And her just even being on there, even if she's not picked, she gets all the money she needs to go to Paris. She gets on to the show and finds out it's not Paris, France. It's Paris, Texas. Mm. And it's literally like 20 minutes from home. Oh, and she already knows The Bachelor.
That sounds awkward.
Okay. Yeah. This does scream awkward sentiment. Okay, so who is the girl that is the artist?
Miranda Cosgrove.
Okay.
and she's fully aware. She's like, I am not in this for love. I just need the money. And they're
I don't
like,
know if I'm ready.
That's like, true.
I don't.
But here's the thing. The cornucopia. So the daughter from Colorado Space is there to find quote unquote Prince Charming. She's literally dubbed Cinderella in this. She is off her rocker, Spencer.
I don't know if I'm ready to see iCarly, try to fight for love here.
She's not, because she's cynical. She's just like, listen, I'm here for the money. And they're like, smile, be happy. And she's like, no, I don't want to. And it's that one of those slow, like, we're going to get ya. And everybody else is like, listen, some of them are there for love. And the person she ends up like befriending, she's like, listen, I'm a scientist. I'm here for the money too. But just pretend. We have to pretend like we really like him. And Miranda's like, I really don't like him. And she's like, good, keep that up. That means the other girls will leave you alone. Like, it's interesting.
I'm not a big fan of like the Bachelor formula. Mm. I know it's already been proven so many times it's fake. So it's all scripted and whatnot. I don't really get the whole idea of like those shows who make women or men fight for the affection of somebody. So when
so
it comes
you're
to
Miranda Cosgrove,
no, I'm just anti this movie.
No, that's literally
so I'd
her
say no on this one.
On this.
What about you, Spence?
Listen, I have a hard time with awkwardness in movies. I'm just like, I can't.
Oh,
I must leave.
Yeah. Especially when you're watching it in your own home. It's like even worse. Like, I'm going to turn this off because they should leave
there
first.
There was one time where like a movie was on and it was so awkward, I left the room.
What movie was it?
I don't know. I was just like, I can never know. Oof.
Now I'm just intrigued, though.
Yeah, well, that memory's been deleted.
Well, it looks like Amy is 0-2 on Streaming
this
is
week.
For Lovers this week. But
this week.
Let's hope next week she comes with a better pitch and better movies.
I
so
have Pakistani.
That brings us
no,
to...
No, you already did too. You can't
New Zealand.
Talk more.
No, I'm leaving it there. That's your
That
teaser.
Brings us to our review of the evening. Oh my God, this is... And that is our take on Disney's Zootopia 2. This movie came out during the course of Thanksgiving break, and of course we were fully focused more on the feast than we were on watching the films. We did get a chance to see it though early, and we didn't really review it when the time came, but we were reviewing it now. We tried.
So we were trying. There were so many things. We were literally overstuffed, wink wink, with all the other movies. So we're trying, people. We really are on this one.
And playing catch up. So, obviously, we're going to go around and we're going to talk about this movie. But before we do, Spencer, why don't you give us that official synopsis goodness?
Rookie cop Judy Hopps and Nick Wilde find themselves on the twisting trail of a great mystery when Gary D. Snake arrives in Zootopia and turns the animal metropolis upside down. To crack the case, Judy and Nick must go undercover to unexpected new parts of town where their growing partnership is tested like never before.
Directed by Jared Bush and Byron Howard, the film sees the return of the talented vocal cast of Jennifer Goodwin, Jason Bateman, Shakira, Idris Elba, Alan Tudyk, Nate Torrance, Don Lake, Bonnie Hunt, and Jenny Slate, joined by newcomers Ke-Huy Quan, Fortune Feimster, Andy Samberg, David Straitham, Patrick Warburton, Quinta Brunson, and Danny Trejo. A couple key pieces of information about the movie. Zootopia 2 opened to a record-breaking box office with $556.4 million in its opening weekend, the biggest debut ever for an animated movie, and the fourth biggest opening of all time. In an interview with Animation Magazine, director Byron Howard says that this is the biggest film ever made in the history of Disney animation. We've got one shot that features 50,000 animals on the screen at the same time. That is insane, because if you think about it from a logistical standpoint, the computing power that they had to use to process all of those CG characters just for the rendering of those scenes probably had to be like in the like terabytes, like probably even bigger.
Is there something bigger than a terabyte? IT guy,
isn't
Spencer?
A quintabyte?
No, I think that's up there. I think exabytes.
Yeah.
Eczema?
Exabytes.
Exabytes, not eczema.
But does it, that? I'm just gonna call it eczema. Well, you know I'm talking about it.
It's not eczema. Oh, okay. So bigger. So from a terabyte, it's a petabyte, exabyte, zettabyte, and yottabyte.
A yotta?
Yada yada.
Mm-hmm. Yada.
Shut the front door. That's cool. It's probably a yottabyte.
So anyway,
I knew it was coming anyway. Yeah.
And like, so you take into account, like, apparently they actually use different software. So like they had changed up the software from the first one, which the first one they use, like they actually use the industry standard type software. I forget what it's called offhand. I knew it like last week. I had it in mind. They ended up having to use like brand new proprietary software just to render everything for all the characters in this one.
Mm.
So that's actually really cool. Last piece of information, the two goat cops are named Boucheron and Chevre, both voiced by French actor Jean Reno. Chevre means goat in French, and Boucheron is a famous French goat cheese. So
Boucheron.
There you go. Boucheron.
Listen, French is hard.
Chevre.
Speaking
and
is hard at this point, Spencer. It's not just, it's just the words are hard.
I just want to gesture at things. Do you and also, people get it?
So, I want to carry just a little ring of like flashcards on my side. And if people want something, I can just hold up a note card.
I already know my flashcard's gonna rip off and it's gonna be an important word.
Well, we're in new technology, Spencer. We could just use our phones and just like here you go.
By the way, this is Janae Renault.
Oh, Jean, I've seen him.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Everybody knows.
People don't
Leon
know
Leon the Professional.
Yeah, people don't sometimes the, know the name.
The French agent from the Matthew Broderick Godzilla movie.
Mission Impossible.
The first Mission Impossible, yes. Yeah. So obviously we're going to talk about this movie. We're going to get into the nitty gritty. And just so that you are warned, because even though we're not going to give away the big ones, we are going to have slight spoilers. So people be warned. If you're very much like a nitpicky person regarding the story, this is your warning. Talking about this movie, obviously we're going to talk about the expectations that go into this film. Now, we are talking about a sequel, which is, you know, when was the first one? What year did the first one debut?
Oh, I almost said 2019, but I don't. 2016.
2016, yeah. I believe, because it's been almost 10 years, right?
Yeah.
So from that one up until this one, so you're looking at about 9 years, 9-10 years. The unique thing is that the scope of time is literally what, a week?
Yeah. Which yeah, is
it's literally
crazy.
1 week from the other one, which was fantastic. Like I enjoyed that bit.
Like the whole idea of it. So okay, let's talk expectations. Obviously we saw the first one. And mind you, we're gonna get into the conversations about, you know, the progress, air quotes, of Disney Animation Studios, Walt Disney Animation Studios, and seeing if they are catching up or still falling behind the Pixar legacy that they have created. And of course, talk about the elements of the film and whatnot. But I want your guys' opinion as far as expectations going into this movie. Did you draw all of your expectations based on the previous film, or did you kind of base it on, you know, the nature of where the world is today? Like, because honestly, it seems like most movies are taking a page out of what's happening in the world today or kind of where things are going versus creating stories that build up on you know, previous films or even whatever the franchise is based on. So let's start with Amy.
Okay. So initially finding out they were doing a second one, I was kind of like, why? Why? And then after all this time, I kind of softened to it. I was watching a couple of the trailers prior and I was like, this is okay. I don't know where I'm at. I'm cautious. I'm like, this doesn't seem like it's straight up just a cash grab. So I'm like, maybe. And then I had something that made me be like, I don't think I want to see this movie. And I have, because it's part of my expectations. I heard the song of the movie way before the movie was out. Because the Disney Channel radio on Sirius XM played it.
Which mind you, that is kind of their MO when it comes to Disney releasing a lot of their songs ahead of time. Because we heard the same thing, you know.
I always wanted a brother.
You know, or even like going back to like the Little Mermaid film that came out where all the songs were debuting ahead of time. I mean, Frozen, for God's sakes.
But this was, I didn't.
Moana 2 was the other one, actually. Yeah, sorry.
But I had no frame of reference. And all I'm hearing is, I was like, oh no. No. I'm like, this is a pivot. So my expectations were suddenly like, I'm not feeling this, homies. And that says a lot for me. So they messed up with the song releasing that before. But Spencer, what about you?
Okay, I have to talk about that song real quick. Yes. Because like, I was like served it and I was like, no, because I have a feeling that if I listen to this, I'm gonna be like, I don't know how I feel about this, because like you're immediately gonna like put it in comparison to Try Everything.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And that seems like that's not fair to this song. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I wait till the movie to actually hear it.
Okay.
But yeah, coming into this movie, I was just, you know, on my standard blackout. I'm like, I don't really need to see anything more. I think I got it. I kind of was expecting them to, like, you know, actually, I had no idea where we were going here, to be perfectly honest. I was like expecting more Zootopia, but I was like, well, they can't just do another twist villain ending. They've already done that. So I don't know what we're doing here, but let's see what they got. Because I do agree, this felt like it might have been less of a cash grab, especially with the trailers.
Mm-hmm.
But then this is also the same studio that is doing another Frozen in like a year or two. And I'm like, I guess we'll just have to see.
And a live action Moana.
Didn't that already come out?
The trailer, the teaser dropped for
that
it.
Movie hasn't come out yet.
The live action one, no,
because
they haven't even revealed 10 years in the teaser. They haven't even revealed like what The Rock's gonna look like.
I thought it was over and done with.
No, just the second one.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, maybe that's why I thought that.
Yeah.
Just bundle them together.
It feels like it because again, it's still a very fresh franchise. So it's like, why?
Yeah.
What's the purpose behind it? But as far as expectations for myself, like the biggest thing for me was I steered clear away from any music. I didn't hear anything on the radio.
You were lucky.
Thank God. I did know Shakira was in it again, so it was gonna be interesting. Like,
oh, they had to have
Shakira.
Gazelle needed to come back. She is their queen.
Yeah. I just didn't know kind of the trajectory they were gonna take with this particular film and how it was going to work as a sequel when they kind of hit a lot of like the highs and big points of like buddy cop, buddy, you know, partnership type movies with the first film. Mm-hmm. So it was really interesting. And I was really kind of just like, okay, I'm open to see it. I think I can speak for the whole table when I say, you know, we all adore Ke Huy Quan. Mm-hmm. So the fact that he was going to be in it, really kind of gave us a little bit of hope, especially hoping that it was going to do better than Love Hurts, which I think was at the beginning of this year.
Yeah.
So he needed a win this year. So honestly, I held out hope that his role was going to be fun, that the movie was going to bring something unique to the table, and ultimately, we were going to have a fun time with it, so... But actually jumping into the theaters and actually getting a chance to see it, let's talk about first impressions right outside the gate. Start with Amy.
Why the heck was this thing so fun? Why the heck did they make me want to watch it immediately after I had finished watching it? Why are you so dang good, homie? This is not acceptable. But it is acceptable. And I will talk about it at length later. But seriously, I was mad excited. And that's a really wrong place to be.
Yeah. Spencer.
Okay, so at the end of the first Zootopia, I was like pretty impressed with how much I liked that movie. And I was like, oh, this was way better than I thought it was going to be because I thought it was going to be garbage and trash. And then at the end of this movie, I was like, they did it twice. And this is a sequel that they like still made like a very good movie. Like, I still think I liked the first one a little bit more, but like this was like a fantastic outing. I'm like... Where is this Disney?
Yeah.
Like, why is this not what we're getting all the time? It's so confusing.
100%. I agree with you 100,000,000%. Like, I walked out of the theater and I'm like, that was a decent follow-up. Like, okay, what's going on? Like, is this going to be a one-off? Is this going to be... Yeah. Because I'm like, I'm seeing the trailers for Hoppers and I'm like, that looks like a train wreck.
Don't get me started on Hoppers. I feel like that's sabotage from Disney.
It quite literally looks like it. And I'm seeing this movie, and just like Amy, I saw it a second time. And it's like, it didn't lose its luster the second time around. And again, this story built on already established aspects of the first film and created like another level deeper of like connection with our characters, with our main characters. And added to that cast, and I was like, okay, well, shoot, you done good, pig, you done good. Like, what else, you know? But I guess this kind of transitions us over into our cast of the film, which obviously Jason Bateman, Jennifer Goodwin, great dynamic, great chemistry. They work really well together, and it shows in their vocal performance in this movie. I think one of the biggest outliers for this particular film has to be Jason Bateman's ability to just be his truest self, and it fit. Mm. Like, if there was a furry version of Jason Bateman, it would look exactly like Nick Wilde.
Yeah.
You know, quite literally, I feel like that's him fully embodied. And I don't know if that's to say that Disney captured the truest essence in every mannerism and the way he acts, in the way he like uses his mouth to move or to talk or whatnot, whatever it may be. Or it's Jason Bateman, you know, just filling the role quite nicely, like he made it his own. But Jason Bateman is really one of the standout performers for this particular movie. Not to say that it speaks any less of Jennifer Goodwin. She is phenomenal as well. But, I mean, come on. Once Upon a Time, Jennifer Goodwin has always been great. So, yeah, I find it really great to see him in vocal roles like that, as far as, you know, especially having that great chemistry. Other performers in the film, anybody want to highlight anybody?
Yes, I want to hit Fortune Feimster, which is her last name is really difficult, but she plays Nibbles Maplestick. My Lord, I didn't know how much I needed her in my life in this capacity.
Quite honestly, the hero of the movie, like the literal hero of this film.
Like, she brings not only a sense of just out there, but confidence, trust, playfulness, and the gumption and weirdness that you didn't think you expected in Zootopia, but we have people that we know that are very similar in the real world. And it was just so nice to see. And every time, I also need to preface, I've seen this movie twice. Okay. I had to see it again. I was just like, I just want to watch her. I want to see what she's doing. She's just in the background. Is she just in the background? Are you sure? Like, there is no way I would not watch. So that's I would watch any type of short they build with her in it. I'm watching immediately. Like, that's how much Fortune did to my heart. Like, just endeared me to her character. It was so great.
And I think the biggest thing too is like the way they formulated her into that character. They didn't make her like a, she was kind of like extra baggage to the two main characters' already complicated relationship. She kind of stood alone as like the person who has everything all, she's like fully confident in who she is. And she already understands like what her role is in the world, and she's happy with it. And never at any point in time does Nibbles Maplestick ever have that kind of conflict with the other characters as far as whose emotions take priority or who needs more attention to what. Every time you see her on screen and every time you hear Fortune's voice, the character just oozes like, I'm good. Like, life is good for me and I am happy with where I am and I am happy to work to make the world a better place. Mm-hmm. And that goes to both, again, the great vocal casting and the CG work that they did. So, Spencer, anybody you want to highlight?
You know, there is always a man, whenever he pops up in a project, I'm always delighted to see. And that man's name is Patrick Warburton.
Yes. Mayor Windance. I see you.
He is the mayor of Zootopia now. And he has a great follow-up of mayors of being either just plain evil or plain evil in a cute way, I guess. So I was like, okay, let's see where he's going to be on the yardstick. Because it's either going to be, the trailers made him seem dumb but fun. So I was like, let's see where we're going with this.
Yeah.
So he was actually a real delight to see.
He was. I have to say, having that kind of character in the movie where he's this actor turned political figure always kind of strikes that like funny point of me, like the irony of real life and how often we see that going on in nowadays. And it's like you see whether or not how his trajectory turns changes in the movie, and you're like, is this what so and so might do? Is this what, like we're if you're listening to us from outside of California, California is known for its wonderful iconic governor that it had at one point in time, who used to be in the 80s. No, we're talking about the one. Yes.
The one that if there was more hair on his head would be Mayor Windance.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, actually.
Let me go with that.
So I found that really hilarious and funny.
Plus he had like just the most ridiculous line. Some say justice is dead, but I say nay.
Yes.
So stupid, so great. So hilarious.
Also pointing and saying, we'll be better together. Like with the hoof at the camera. There were so many puns. It was good.
Honestly, I could do with more political zoo time.
It was great. It was really good. And Patrick Warburton is one of those types of actors and voice actors, because if you're familiar with his work on Family Guy, you know he is so versatile as Joe, mm-hmm. as many
or
other
you
things.
Just like Kronk. Let's be honest. True. We're here for Kronk.
True, although Family Guy is still on the air and he's still in it.
And
just
people
saying.
Still love Kronk.
Yes.
Just don't have to. We don't compare.
He got his own spinoff thing because people liked him so much.
Exactly.
He did?
Yeah.
Yeah, Kronk's new groove.
Oh, you're talking about, okay. I thought you were talking about Kronk. Yeah, I'm like, Joe Swanson got his own show? That would be great.
Might as well. Gabe Cleveland won.
Cleveland had his entire one too.
I mean, I'm still waiting for a spinoff from Seinfeld as Putty, but still. Like,
I would have watched that.
I would have totally watched it.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's just a great actor, and he seems like a great guy. So to see him in roles like this, it looks like he's having fun. It sounds like he's having fun, so you know he's probably more than likely having fun. But of course, the other actor that we all want to talk about is Ke Huy Quan, whom has made quite the wave in Hollywood within the last few years. Honestly, with his work from Everything Everywhere All at Once through Love Hurts just about everything that he's lent his talents to.
We're talking even old school when he was a wee youngin' in Goonies.
But as I stated, the more recently, mm-hmm. Ke Huy Quan has, huh?
I went X-Men 2 stunt coordinator.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, his role in this movie is absolute fun, and you definitely can tell, like, he's just having a great time with it. It doesn't feel like he's, you know, being forced into a certain role. It doesn't feel like he's forcing the performance. Honestly, it felt like he was quite literally embodying the snake that he was trying, you know, that he was portraying on screen, and every single sentiment and whatnot, like, you know, we shall persevere. We will, you know,
we will succeed.
Yes.
Persevering, we'll succeed.
We'll succeed. Yeah. Okay, whatever. But either way, he was great. And it was very encouraging. And I feel like if Ke Huy Quan ever wanted to get into like motivational speaking, I feel like he'd make a killing just mm-hmm. speaking out of true earnesty. Was there anybody else you guys wanted to highlight?
You know, I'm just going to gesture vaguely at the entire cast.
I was just going to say
there is like just a whole bunch of people in this movie, mm-hmm. even for like quick throwaway lines. Like they got Michael J. Fox. They've got
Michael J. The Fox.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They've got Rob Irwin in here. Like there's
a koala.
Yes.
Four
Give us four thumbs. Yeah, that was really cool too.
I have two. There is literally, you can go through this and there's a million. So there's two, one that turned out to be just really ridiculous and I appreciated it. And I think Spencer appreciated it. Josh Gad as Paul Moldebrandt.
He was the IT guy.
The IT mole.
Did you try not being an idiot?
And I was like, Spencer feels this. Spencer feels this.
And then like, CM Punk and Roman Reigns as zebras.
As zebras.
Yeah, the wrestler zebras.
Yes.
But I had one more, which was a delightful surprise. So the sketchy lady pig, which was her name was Captain Fern Hogbottom. No joke.
Oh, the one that looked like
on the payroll.
The one that looked like the Razorback.
Yeah. And she is a Razorback and she had one blue eye. That's one Michelle Gomez, a.k.a. Missy, from Doctor Who. She's Missy.
Could not even tell that was her.
Oh, yeah.
Because they let her use her actual accent. Which is great. And I was like, shut up. And then she was like promoting. I was like, oh, ma'am.
I mean, quite literally, there's a ton of vocal talents in this movie. Like Danny Trejo as Jesus the Lizard. I mean, there's so much. And then, again, we're going to have to kind of transition over into the story because that also lends itself to not only great Easter eggs within the vocal cast, but then in the story itself and the world that it builds, in this particular movie, obviously, there's a much larger threat at bay because of the fact that there's much more to Zootopia that you're exposed to and that you are made aware of. And it definitely gives you more of the opportunity to explore more of that world. But I have to say, the really funny and super intentional, obviously, Easter eggs that this movie drops is on like the dozens scale here, because every time there was another scene, Amy was jabbing me to the left and like, you see that? That's a this is that. Or you see that? That's a this is that. And I'm like, I'm trying to watch the movie.
Like, there's stuff in the swamp market. There's stuff in the desert. There's stuff in the apartments. There's stuff in the mole town, which we saw in the first one, but we're like even seeing more. There is jokes in a parade, people in a parade. There are jokes, like, and it's literally, you can hear that I'm slightly flabbergasted, because literally even just thinking about it, I'm excited for the opportunity when I can pause so that I can actually absorb this. There's a not very obscure, but like there was a shout out to Marvel. There was a shout out to the Disney parks. There was a shout out to original like characters. There's so much.
It really is.
And then there were homages everywhere too, which were so great to see. And I know, because I'm looking at Eddie, you know which one I'm talking about, because it's a big giant one.
Which one?
The big one right towards the end.
The big one right towards the end.
The
oh, yes. Which we'll touch on that a little later, just because I don't want to give that away quite yet. But there's several different instances throughout this movie where it's like, okay, this movie quite literally creates a eccentric world within Zootopia that honestly makes you feel like you're seeing it again for the first time. I mean, one of the biggest non-spoiler ones that I thought was like really, really fun was they have their own Burning Man. But it's not called Burning Man. Yeah. It's called Burning Mammal.
And everybody's in everything.
Yes. And it is so cool to see all the things. And I'm pretty sure that's where that scene is, where they have like 50,000 people.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because that scene is so massive. But It is so awesome to see like everybody dancing, everybody making music, everybody performing, and it looks quite literally how it looks if you've ever been or have ever seen glimpses or clips of Burning Man on TV.
Or even like Electric Daisy. Like if you've seen massive rave festivals, the giraffes had fairy wings and tutus, and I was like, this is fantastic. And yes. So good.
It's really like one of those types of things where you watch it and it becomes like a Where's Waldo type thing. Yeah. Like you're just looking at all the wonderful little, you know, little hints here and there of like, oh, that's pretty much this or that's this.
Well, one of the cameo, I guess, Easter eggs in Burning Mammal, and it's not a big thing, but Tommy Chong, who was the yak in the first one, is in the scenes in Burning Mammal. And I was like, Tommy! And then they're just like, pass. I was like, dang it, come back.
Yeah.
But I think he was wearing a loincloth.
Which makes sense because he's a nudist. So
yeah, well, he wouldn't be wearing anything at Burning Mammal. But that was, yeah, that sequence, that the parade, the market, the press, some of the press stuff. There's so much just really cool care that has been taken in not only developing a story which actually tackles some pretty serious like themes, and it keeps you engaged and it doesn't feel preachy, like and I think that really goes to not only the directing but really to the writing of how they built a story that they could have these conversations with children without pandering to the children and without parents. If they're intentionally trying to avoid it, they're not going to get the messages. But it's really kind of like, listen, you're not dumb. Your kids aren't dumb. This is what this is about. And I appreciated that. Like, it expanded on Zootopia, but it also, it for lack of a better pun, so sorry, it didn't retract its claws.
Yeah, I think that's the thing about this movie that I find both great and confusing, is that like we're not talking down to people. We are talking, like, we're bringing everything down to like a level kids can just interact and like have fun with. And I'm like, why is this not the default mode for Disney. That's the thing that I was like, I don't understand now.
It's like in my opinion, I was talking about it with someone and I told them, I feel like this is kind of like what we got in the 90s with the Shrek Renaissance. We're coming back into a space, God willing, and I'm saying this, knocking on apparently Amy's wooden head. you knocked on your head, so I'm assuming knock on wood.
It's knock on wood.
But that's your head's not made of wood.
You don't have...
Okay. Either way.
Yes, I've never heard that.
That's what I was always taught, that if you didn't have wood around you, just knock on your head.
You're sitting on a wooden chair.
Yeah, I just realized that after I hit
a wood chair.
I know.
Look. That's wood. There you go.
Yeah, pay money for that kind of wood.
but I feel like we're coming into an era, and I know it needs that one great spark, just like Shrek did when it dropped and people realized you could have a kids movie that serves both kids and adults. Not the same serving, but two different things that they can grab and they can enjoy and have fun with and not feel like they had to dumb themselves down just to have a good time. And we're coming. I feel like this is a great indicator. I don't know if this is it. It might be the next one that comes, or it might be the one that comes in 5 years. I don't know, but I feel like we're sitting on the precipice of what could be the next Shrek Renaissance. And I feel like this is one of those obvious, instances where a movie, first off, Walt Disney Animation Studios is capable of doing something like this, because this is purely evidence right here. But number two, it's the proof is in the pudding with that weekend box office numbers. People saw it in droves and came out on the other side wanting to see it a second time. I paid to see it a second time. Amy paid to see it a second time.
I wanted to pay to see it a second time.
You're willing to pay a second time too.
The idea of it is that the fact that this movie was dual serving. There are scenes in this movie where they're silly and fun and kids are going to laugh because there were kids hooting and hollering in the theater I was in. But at the same time, there's also scenes that serve like, oh my God, that's an homage to this. That is so cool. Or, oh my God, that was this, blah, blah. Oh my gosh, there was a Silence of the Lambs reference in here. That was so cool. And there were kids that were laughing because it's like it was a silly situation. But us adults were watching like, holy crap, that's Anthony Hopkins. And that's them doing this bit with Anthony Hopkins. And it was great. And it was so much fun. And there were real raw instances that created so much sentimentality to it and emotional depth that, yes, as children can understand it as well, there's a deeper resonance for some adults. And mind you, I believe Inside Out is a Pixar movie.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Even though Pixar created Inside Out 2, that I feel lent itself to kind of recognize that that's the trajectory we need to go with. We need to work with the ages. We need to see where the ages are moving with the first film to this one and make sure we're not insulting the intelligence of any of the audiences. And it's accessible. You're not, there wasn't any scene where like the characters who were doing the Silence of the Lambs thing were like, oh, they're also eating brains at the same time. Cause, oh, you get that from the second, movie or whatever. Like, no, there were scenes that were tastefully homages that give like hints of it enough that you can get the reference and you get entertainment out of it. But I really feel like Disney is on the cusp of either starting it or being the ones to build it. But it depends on how quickly they move. And of course, like I said, Hoppers is right on the right around the corner. And I don't really have a lot of high hopes
and
for it.
And I feel like that's them putting Pixar in a corner again. But I would also like to point out,
is that a Pixar movie?
That is Pixar. Yeah, right there. That's why I feel like that's them bullying them, because like that doesn't even feel like a Pixar movie.
No, it doesn't.
That feels like Disney animation.
That does feel like Disney animation.
Yeah, and that's why this Zootopia is so weird, is it kind of like, even though I know it, coming into it, it was definitely Disney, like animation studio, it kind of shifted more towards like being Pixar because like of how they were willing to talk about things in this movie. I would also like to point out that it's 2025 when this movie released, and 2 years ago, Disney Animation Studio released Wish. So the glow up from Wish to this is insane.
Well, let me also throw some delightful background in on this too. So this is co-directed by Jared Bush, who is the new chief creative officer for Walt Disney Animation Studios. Okay. And his other co-director is one Byron Howard. Now, the reason this is important is because one, they both co-directed Zootopia, the first one.
Mm-hmm.
And they co-directed Encanto, where they won an Academy Award for Best Animated Film. And then they went back in and did this guy, which is definitely going to be up on that list of award-winning animation for this year. So the reason I also bring that up is because Byron Howard is the first LGBT director to win an Academy Award for an animated film. But also the stories that he has co-directed, because he seems to co-direct a lot.
Mm-hmm.
He started with Bolt in 2008, which, if anybody remembers Bolt, had a lot of heartstrings pulling. And then he did Tangled. And then he was kind of ramping.
Ah, that makes sense now.
Yeah.
No. I mean the Tangled thing, because the reference where Nick hits Gary with the pan, it's the same thing that Rapunzel does with
Flynn.
Yeah.
So what I was looking at is because Byron Howard did all of those things, and each of those, especially when we're looking at Tangled and Encanto.
She was going to say Encanto.
She's
going to say Encanto.
When it's Boucheron. Like, no.
Yeah, I don't speak French. Oh, gladly. Boucheron. You're lucky I didn't say Butcherin. You're lucky I didn't say Butcherin. Butcherin?
Large flying buttresses.
Boucheron.
The thing that I'm seeing is that the people that are closer to the home on these projects, especially when it comes to like Encanto or Tangled, they're willing to give more of themselves in the stories, but also ask for they don't even ask their audience to come along. They say, this is the experience that a lot of us have had. We're not going to make like, grandma wasn't the villain, but she's really bad. And, you shouldn't be rooting for her. It's asking and giving true human emotions to the characters so that we feel connected with the work.
Yeah, I was going to say, if there is any movies within the Walt Disney Animation Studios, filmography that speak to the human element a little bit more than most of the others, I do have to say it's probably those ones.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not so sure about Bolt, but I'm pretty sure the other ones, like even Tangled. Tangled spoke to that as well. Encanto, we've talked about it at length. What did you say was the other one?
Zootopia and Zootopia 2. Well,
yeah. And then we obviously, because we've been talking about these ones as well. But like, all they need to do is just bring in the guy from Elemental and they'll destroy us in theaters.
Gotta get past those shareholders.
Yeah, I mean, true. Aren't they supposed to be sitting? Oh, that's Pixar. Coco. I was like, if they're trying to do a Coco too, I'm going to lose it. I can't do that.
I think they are.
Yeah.
Yeah. I still can't do that. I'm already crying thinking about it. I don't need another moment.
Remember me again.
No. my Lanta. I can't do that.
But I have to say, like, with their track record and them really being given the liberties to kind of show exactly what kind of vulnerability a movie can have when you be honest and you be sincere about emotions, that seems to be kind of the motif with most of their movies. You know, you look at Encanto, it's the same thing. You know, you look at Tangled, it's the same thing. You know, the effort of being vulnerable and being willing to be vulnerable only to find that there are some people who take advantage of it, but the people who truly care about you only want to see you succeed and protected.
Yeah.
And that kind of seems to be the case with all their movies, which makes sense, you know, seeing as if anybody's coming from a queer background within the efforts of building this movie. I mean, just look around you. Like, quite honestly, the world is not kind to anyone within the minority group. So seeing them take the opportunity to build on the fact that community builds protection and community builds an understanding that we all belong in this world kind of echoes everything that you get from both Zootopia 1 and Zootopia 2.
Yeah, and this one really comes in and tackles media and manipulations, corrupt systems, gentrification, and but while it's tackling those, it continues to bolster, support, and encourage the not just the we're all in this together mentality, but that the first movie talked about our differences are what make us unique, and that's what makes us strong. And it's echoed and pushed, and it brings in found family and community. And all it keeps doing is they might be great, but we are greater, which is something that, again, where we're currently sitting with our political climate and the world as a whole is something that you want to keep encouraging children to remember, but also fortifying and supporting adults who truly, like, they're taking their kids to see this, or they're tagging along as aunts and uncles, or just going to see it, period, that they're not alone in the fight, and that it is okay to lean on the community around you and the found family and the family that you've created to keep moving forward. It's Gary DeSnake. Mm-hmm. We will succeed. Like that, it seems kind of like, oh yeah, okay. Okay, Key, we get you. And it's not just the conviction of what he says, it's the fact that it continues to follow up and it gives you hope.
Yeah, I thought about that at first. Like you listen to, so truth be told, he does say that quite often. We will succeed.
A lot.
But you think about it, and like repetition is what helps in the study of the human mind. Repetition is what helps keep things to cement themselves within mindsets. So hearing it over and over will give you the opportunity for it to stay longer.
You know what's really weird? What? Sorry to interrupt. But like, the more he said it, the more nervous I got. I was like, oh, they better not kill him off. Like, I was just like, narratively speaking, I was like, I don't like how we're repeating this often.
And he's so wonderful and trusting and so optimistic about it. And we're like, he's the first, and everybody else is real, is like, he's the first one that's going to go. Like, yeah. They're coming. It's not just because he's a snake. They're coming for him because he's an optimist.
Yeah.
Just like with Judy, you're like, girl, they're coming for you too because you're an optimist.
But no, I totally forgot what I was talking about.
Repetition is key. No, so, we will succeed. So, snake.
Mind you, yes. And yes, to your point as well, Spencer. Like, it's like, why does he keep saying that? What's going to happen to him? But I walked out of the theater the second time and I realized the reason why it's repeated so much is because there were children who were listening and it stuck with them. And I had kids walking out of the theater as I was leaving the second time around and they're like, we will succeed. I will succeed. You know, and they were like, they were saying it out loud and it's like, they got it. Like they like Disney figured it out. Like it sounds almost like what they were doing on like the Disney Channel, like with certain shows or whatever. But like the fact is they made it to where these children are repeating this repeated line from a really fun snake in a cartoon movie they saw, and it's sticking with them. And even if they weren't saying it now, they were going to come back to it later and they were going to remember, like, oh, Gary DeSnake said, you know, we will succeed. You know, if they were doing something difficult or if they were having a problem or whatever, like, you create that cemented mindset within children. And here's the mind-boggling thing. That's a Pixar thing. Like, that feels like something Pixar would do. And we have Walt Disney Animation Studios creating this opportunity. And again, this is not a dig at Walt Disney Animation Studios. This is not a dig at what they're doing. This is just a, you guys okay? Like, did somebody finally break through the Iron Curtain of Michael Eisner and really made them realize that, you know, true... hard-hitting. Oh, is that who it is now? I thought it was.
No, Eisner is no longer there. It was Bob Chapek, and it's Bob Iger, who was Bob the Tiger in this.
That was,
which is even, he's the current CEO.
Bob Iger.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry. Bob Iger. Whoever. Whatever. Amy's the local Disney expert, if you guys haven't figured it out.
Calling people by name.
let me get Bob on the line.
Yeah. Let me
hold,
give.
Please.
Bobby.
But who broke through? Who got to you, man? Yeah, who's and like, letting this in? Let's
but
go.
But I think the bigger question that this movie leaves us with is, will we see it again? Mm. Like, because we see all the impact this movie did. We see, again, like I said earlier, the financial implications of when people find something they like, they'll be more easily capable of returning to it. And this is one of those instances where people are so easily ready to run back to this theater to go see it again. We did it, you know? So it makes you wonder, like, what exactly is brewing over there? And are we going to continue to see what they're cooking up for what is to ultimately bring about the Shrek Renaissance, or if this is the start of it?
They, you know, they're boiling mad that you're calling it the Shrek Renaissance.
That's what it is.
I know, but still, I mean,
the fact
like,
is,
the Disney Renaissance. We were more important. We were there first.
And the fact is that there is so much truth in it because Shrek.
Yeah.
Broke the mold.
I agree.
And if they don't, I mean, they need to call a spade a spade. Mm. They were failing in the story department when it came to creating the connect for both children and adults in all years. There was nobody, no adult who was walking into The Little Mermaid and thought, that little girl deserves to be with that grown man on that boat over there. Give her the dang legs so she can go and be with him. Like, nobody was thinking that.
We were thinking it looks beautiful.
And then, Daddy, I love him.
And all the other instances where every single Disney parent was dying in movies was like, oh yeah, parents are really wanting to see that. They're like, great. You know, that you come up with Frozen and what happens? The parents die. So, or I'm sorry, they landed on the island where Tarzan is ended up being birthed.
See, but that's also the spot that I want to highlight where there were stories that were in there that just got blown. I'm looking at Atlantis, the Lost Empire. I'm looking at, if we want to bring up Tarzan.
Treasure Planet.
You want to bring up Chicken Little, but nobody talks about. Like, there's a pocket of it. Again, we're not talking about Home on the Range. Like, calm yourself. There's a pocket of movies.
That wasn't a Disney movie.
Yeah,
it was.
Was it?
Yes.
Yeah, it was.
I thought it was a Nickelodeon range.
There's a reason you feel like that.
There's a reason. There's a pocket of movies where literally there was still good animation. There were good stories that were coming out, but everybody was like, we're done. Yeah, we don't want
Disney feature animation.
We don't want that. And it was the Shrek Renaissance, really, which it created the bridge when it didn't talk down to the kids. Mm-hmm. It was like, hey, adults, we know you're in here. We're in here too. We got you, baby. It's okay. And Disney's like, we're giving you stories. We're giving you amazing animation. And everyone's like, eh. And so part of me always has a soft spot for the ones that literally got overlooked, where I'm like, you trapped, baby. You're a good egg. But this like Encanto, and even when they let Pixar do Coco and actually be Pixar, Walt Disney Animation was always in contention, which is something we've talked about consistently. And they're very much like, but it's about me. I got to be the popular. It's a Marsha moment, I swear. And now it's like, uh-oh. Jan figured it out. She combed her hair and it's not the afro. Like, we're going to have a problem. And the question is, will Disney as a whole let Pixar continue to be Pixar and do all the beautiful things?
No, I'm just going to come out and say it. No, they're like, if I can turn into Jan, I can turn Jan into Marsha. And that's what they're trying to do so that they can be the most beloved and special little animation studio. And it's really annoying.
And the thing that I will always be this optimist of going like, maybe there's a chance. Maybe, because let's be honest. Moana 2, Wish, Strange World, we don't even talk about. Those are all Disney animation. And they were the stankiest stank that ever did stank. And meanwhile, Pixar's like, how do you feel about some In-N-Out? Like Inside Out, not In-N-Out.
I was about to say. I think she's hungry.
They're Emeryville. They're fine. We're all in California. But it's like, how'd you like some Inside Out? How would you like, even Ralph Breaks the Internet? Which, oh no, that was Disney, wasn't it? Dang, I can't remember.
Yeah.
But still, we're looking at that back and forth where Pixar was having their spark shorts, and they have the first time that, which I've talked about it extensively, which is Win or Lose, which is their limited series that they did. Pixar has the means and definitely the creativity to make something that, if in partnership with Walt Disney Animation, could be great. And I'm just hoping that our Brady Bunch will come together and acknowledge it's okay if you're not Marcia. Just be Jan. Do some nice things. Just surprise us from time to time. You don't have to. No, you don't have to be the popular one. There's room at the table. Share. Yeah.
Yes, but do you know who's standing in the way? Disney shareholders. True. You must increase profits at all costs.
Which is actually, I think, one of the things that's kind of scary when you were talking about, Eddie, the opportunity for, like, where does this go? Because we're looking at a cash grab. This was almost 10 years that these guys were like, hold up.
Yeah.
Let's take our time. Let's make something worth making. And now they're like, hold up. This made so much money. Let's go. I don't want it. Like, in the interim of those 9/10 years, they made a little collection of Zootopia shorts, which is really fun.
Which has only been in the last, like, year or two, if we're being honest.
If we're talking about Zootopia Plus,
yeah.
It came out in 2022.
Okay, so
the last 3 years.
So it's still
there. And just 1 year, right? It only lasted
a couple of episodes. They were short. They gave you more insight to characters. They expanded the world, but it was also kind of like a test space to be like, are you still interested in Zootopia? Like, how are you feeling? And it did so good that they're like, cool, we can keep doing our project. I want that. I want the time and consideration to build a world and not force feed it through ChatGPT.
Mm, yeah. Well, okay. So, I mean, the thing is, I haven't seen those shorts, but I feel like if they've done the shorts and they've done this movie, I feel like they were like, well, where could we go already? Just like thinking about it, at least, which should be enough to kickstart a faster process.
You would think, but like, honestly,
okay, I will watch it. I can just tell by your face.
So Spencer, there is one episode that's dedicated to Mr. Big's daughter, Judy, that's in the frame of the Real Housewives. And it's a short, but they're each like Real Housewives and there's a whole bunch of moles. There's one that is the entire backstory of Mr. Big and how he came to be, and it's narrated by him. There's one that's all about Duke Weaselton.
I was going to say.
Sorry, Alan Tudyk. Like, and it's fun. Like, it actually does such a great job of being like, oh, you got a little treat? Are you interested in this? And it has spirit, which is something that's really fun and really frustrating as well.
So I think this does bring me to my roundtable question, because I do kind of want to get your ideas. So we did mention, obviously, there is without a doubt going to be a third one.
Yeah.
If the mid-credit scene didn't
end.
Was it an end credit?
It was all the way at the end.
Okay. Well, if the end credit scene didn't hint towards it, obviously the numbers will. And so I kind of want your guys' thoughts. So after how strong Zootopia 2 turned out, what direction would you guys want the potential third film to go? A deeper detective mystery, a political thriller, buddy comedy, or something totally new? Now, this is obviously without really kind of leaning towards what that end credit scene hints at, which isn't really much, but we're looking at more so the sentiment. And in the conversation of everything that we said, Disney has built with this one and hoping that they build off of it and not do the same thing. What are your thoughts? And I see Aim's brain cooking.
So the hard thing is because of even the kind of you don't know inference of the end credit scene, it feels like it's going to be a mystery, because we're talking, there's always going to be a case. There has to be a case for Judy and Nick to solve. They can't just go to the grocery store. There's got to be something. And so with this one, it sounds really funny, but I would love to have a proper whodunit. I would love to get it
Are you talking about like a Hercule
Poirot or Agatha Christie? Like, what is it?
Like a Death on the Nile or a
Blanc.
Oh, Knives Out.
Yeah. But I can't remember his name because Sesame Street just made a Muppet of him.
Saw the Muppet.
And he's Beignet Blanc, and I'm like, that's not his Beignet. Name. Eddie saw his puppet. Greg saw his puppet and got really excited. So I'm like, this is amazing. Beignet Blanc. But I want some
Benoit Blanc.
Benoit, thank you. I
was like, hold on, I don't think that's right.
Well, the Muppet is named Beignet. But yeah, you should see it. It's really great.
I have seen it.
So I think that would be really fun to tackle because it would take a lot of the it would literally no pun intended, shift gears with Judy, who is the go, 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 go. And you need Nick in the sly bit, which we see in here, but it shifts how you are participating not only in their world, but in the investigation of a mystery and a crime to solve. So I would be intrigued to see it kind of shift gears into that type of style instead of just like, we're everywhere and we're exploring all Zootopia and this is what we're looking for and people.
What about you, Spence?
Well, you know, I mean, I guess this really wholly depends on what kind of story you could come up with. Mm-hmm. But like, you know, they could kind of keep doing what they're doing, which is kind of the surprising thing of like, because like Zootopia 1 and Zootopia 2, even though they're still like, you know, kind of a buddy cop thing, they're really different mm-hmm. in how they go about that. Yeah. And you know what? I'm kind of fine with like this formula, which is not really what I would have expected me to end up with. Like, you know, explore, yes, but like if you think you can come up with a good story, keep it the same. If you can come up with a good story.
Yeah.
I really feel like that should just be like the de facto standard. If you can come up with a good story, do it, but apparently not.
I'm going to preface this by saying that there is a very, 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 very heavy emphasis in this particular film. If there's one particular slight confusing aspect of it, it's how much of an emphasis they are putting on the dynamic between Nick and Judy. And there is... So one of the fallouts from the first Zootopia was the nature of Rule 34.
I love that Spencer was like, where are we going? Wait, I got it now.
And if you're not aware of what Rule 34 is...
Please don't Google.
In the most innocent ways of how I can put this, Rule 34 is if it can be sexualized,
it is.
And so I say that so that you don't have to look it up. There are things out there that people have applied Rule 34 to that have made it sexual in nature. And one of those things, even though it's a simple children's film, they have made the dynamic between Judy and Nick a bit more affectionate and romantic. And so you would think that in the last 9 years, Disney would have taken or the writers would have taken the opportunity to not lean so heavily into the nature of kind of what that outcome and that fallout created. Because right out the gate, we get, you know, mom and dad, Nick and Judy.
Foxy daddy shirt.
Yes. Yeah, that was wild.
It was a foxy daddy shirt.
And they have a child.
Shout out to the Finnick Fox, though.
Yes, which... So... So if the notion of how Arby's is or if you should like Arby's rings a bell with
never
this
eaten Arby's.
Then you'll know where I'm going with this.
I'm so confused.
So Spencer, I'm looking at you. Yeah. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Okay. So Amy, so there is a comic. And it was a string of three comics that went back to back to back. That was essentially within the Rule 34 realm, but it wasn't graphic. But the notion of it was essentially Nick and Judy woke up for the day, or Judy woke up from the day they were in the same bed, woke up, and came to find out that she was pregnant.
Uh-huh.
And she went to wake up Nick to tell him. Nick's like, let me get ready for the day, blah, 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 this, this, and that. And then she tells him, and he's like, oh, that's great. Yeah, let's, you know, whatever. And she's like, no, you don't understand. I don't think I'm going to keep it. And it turns into this whole kind of adult conversation.
Oh my
gosh. Of like, and ultimately Nick leaves because she smacks him in the face because of whatever happens in the story.
Is that the random picture of her smacking him in Saber Spark's video?
So, because of the nature of the comic, it has people in the meme culture have changed the words around so that it works better as a funnier thing than what the actual content are. One of those instances is Nick fighting for the reason as to why he loves Arby's. And so that's why I say Arby's, because it's a variation of that comic that was done in meme form. And it's ridiculous, and it's.
I'm glad I don't live on the internet like this.
Either way,
it's a bad place.
It is a bad place.
I've never eaten at Arby's, so I don't have to fight for anything.
But I say all that to say this was all created between the years of when the movie first came out to before this movie dropped the sequel.
Okay.
I'm 110,000,000% certain that somebody on staff made mention that this is out there. This Arby's. Is a thing. No, just all of it in general. It's all there.
Spencer is laughing maniacally.
Here's my headcanon on this. Uh-oh. There's someone old who works there who's like, oh, yeah, and they can just be friends. And, oh, yeah, we could put them in a fun little fur daddy thing. And, like, some young intern's like, I'm not going to be the one to lose my job to tell you about what's happening out there.
Right? Some stockholder's like, you should make them be a mom and dad. This is an... Okay, sir.
That was the then.
But so mind you, that comic was out, and that's the first scene that pops up you see him.
That's the first scene.
And so it's that indicated to me right away that they know.
Oh, they know a lot.
And they not just that they know, but they're letting us know that they know.
We know. We've seen you.
So
we know if they were going to do anything about anything, they wouldn't have done that. They would have gotten 100%. Rid of Gazelle's tigers too.
Yes. They would have.
So
they still looking good. Let's go.
I say all that to say. I feel like the next one is going to be an international spy type thriller, but it's also going to integrate a third person. And I feel like this person is going to be another Fox.
A try.
I'm glad you didn't say what I thought you were going to say.
I went the other direction.
And I feel like she is going to be another Fox. Probably of a different variety, but a Fox nevertheless. And it's going to create, or even something else entirely. It's going to be a competition against Nick's affection towards Judy. And I feel like there's going to be some kind of, in the midst of whatever the story's going to be embroiled in, because it's going to, I mean, we've already explored the fullness of Zootopia, and you come to learn in the story that there are other continents nearby. So there are possibilities outside of Zootopia. So it's not a Pangea-style type of world. So I feel like it's going to be an international thriller. I feel like they're going to get kind of recruited into this because of all their work in Zootopia. And they're going to have a third person on the case that works with them that's going to compete for the affection that Nick has for Judy.
So there's an English Fox, no pun intended.
Maybe. Although I don't, but there's no England.
Everybody has accents, babe.
I'm just saying.
And I got to call you babe. But everybody's got accents. And the fact is, we have, aside from what Michael J. the Fox, I didn't see a lot of other foxes. I saw lots of otters. I've seen lots of other animals. But English Fox would be very seductive.
Oh,
looking
very
at
true.
You, Robin Hood. We remember.
That is true. That is very true.
I don't know what it is with Disney and their foxes.
Right.
So ridiculous.
So mind you, I think that's where they're going to take it. Am I hoping I'm right? No. I'm really hoping that it doesn't continue.
The internet is like, we heard you, film philosophers. We're on the case.
Like. Comic number two, Foxy Daddy. All right.
Don't Google that either.
So, yeah. I mean, who knows? But I feel like the trajectory they're going, I feel like they're taking, as weird as this sounds, I feel like they're trying to take ownership of everything that's been created for, like, in regards of the film, but they're not doing it the right way. Because, honestly, who puts the main character in a shirt that says Foxy Daddy, and then the first scene you see them in is a direct, you know, a direct call out to the story
that their mom and dad,
to the comic that was made. Regard, either way, it's still like they're trying to take ownership of it, but they just don't know how. So, wrapping this.
So before we wrap it, okay. So just as a recap, we've got me, Agatha Christie style whodunit.
Yeah,
we've
like got a Murder on the Orient Express kind of thing.
Murder on the Orient Express. We've got Spencer with Buddy Cops, ? Keep it up, hey. And we've got you, international spy thriller, fight for affection and love of their lives.
And continuing Rule 34 exposition.
If you keep saying Rule 34, we're going to get flagged. Yeah, I don't think
pushing algebraic equations in not good places. Okay. Wrapping this thing up, let's go ahead and go around the table and talk about whether the film passes or fails and how many monocles. Let's start with Amy.
All right. This film passes, even with things that
go bump in the night.
Eddie's brought up, and I'm waving my hand. It goes bump in the night. No, stop it.
She's a rabbit.
Please stop.
They mentioned that she should come back home and have babies.
That's her Graham. Leave it alone. There's also a grandpapa. That's Mr. Big, and I didn't even talk about him this entire time. This film passes for me. It is really the culmination, and you feel the culmination of almost 10 years of faith in not only the product that they're doing, but faith in the story and how their leadership is leading them. And considering that, you know, one of the co-directors became the new chief creative officer for Walt Disney Animation.
Says a
gives
lot.
Me not only says a lot, but gives me hope, and I hope it is not misplaced. This film was fun, which seems to be something that we are not truly lacking in this department, but with everybody and animation that is continuing to try to reach in and strangle your emotions, having something that's fun, that doesn't feel preachy, that recognizes that you're probably there with kids or with, you know, your inner child is okay. And you come out of it being more excited to not only watch it again, but to experience a world where everything will be okay. And you don't have to carry the weight of the world on your shoulders, in the words of Gary the Snake, because I don't have any. So this guy truly does get a 4.8 out of 5 monocles for me. And the only reason it doesn't get more is because Eddie is trying to turn me to the dark side. And I don't
I haven't said anything.
You're the reason this is down. Spencer.
Yeah, this movie passes. You know, it's really shocking, to be perfectly honest, that this movie is from the same studio that made the last two movies that came out of the studio. I honestly have no idea what this means at all, because like they're just so all over the place that I have no idea for like quality or what have you. It seems like it's a real Russian roulette of like what you're going to get out. So I guess we'll see how the next movie, Hexed, I think is up next.
That's right. That
comes out next year. So I guess
Hexed.
Mm-hmm.
Don't know anything about it.
They haven't released anything about it.
Yeah.
They're letting Hoppers do its business.
Yeah. So while they go about their business trying to kill Pixar again, this movie's great though. Yeah. So it's like really fantastic. It's a great watch, has a great message, really fantastic voice actors. Honestly, it was a sequel I was not expecting much from, but got a lot out of. So I'm going to give it 4.5 out of 5.
There you go. Yeah. As far as myself, the film does pass. I did feel like the movie, although I wasn't sure if this was the sequel we needed, ended up becoming the sequel that we all had been wishing for a long time. In fact, the movie we had been wishing for a long time from Walt Disney Animation Studios. The story wraps up really nicely. And as far as the score goes, I honestly had a great time with this movie. I feel like everybody who walked in ended up leaving the film with so much more hope for what could be the community as a whole within the world we live in today. So With that, I'm going to give it a 4.5 out of 5 as well. I feel like people are going to continue to have a great time with it. And if you hadn't had a chance to see the film in theaters, you definitely have a chance now. And by the way, I do want to mention Rachel House is in this movie.
Yes.
And she is Grandma Taller. She's one of the giraffes. In the Moana movie, she plays Grandma Tala. And so I thought that was really great because no child left behind. but that about wraps up another awesome episode of the Film Philosophers. Remember, you can check us out over at our website at filmphilosopherspodcast.com. There we got allegedly over 300 episodes, everything from action, anime, comedy, suspense, thrills, and chills. If you're looking for it, we got it. Head on over to our website at filmphilosopherspodcast.com. You can also check us out wherever podcasts are streaming, and that's iTunes, Libsyn, Player FM, Audioboom, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn, iHeart, and Amazon Music. You can tune into your heart's desire on any one of those platforms. Look for us there at The Film Philosophers. Give us a like or a subscribe and listen in. Did you see Zootopia 2? How did it fare to Zootopia 1? Did you like it? Did you not like it? Let us know your thoughts in the Tao section. We love to read those. And if you like what you hear, give us a 5-star review. We've earned it.
We have.
Yes, please.
If you can check us out over at the socials, over at facebook.com/filmphilosophers and on Twitter, Instagram, and Threads at filmphilosophy101. Over at Instagram is where we post all of our great hijinks. In fact, me and Spencer just recently saw a movie that we're kind of excited to show you guys and talk about. So we'll be revealing that episode later in the future. But you can also catch all of our extra content, such as Spencer's Big Score and Amy's Jane on Scene, which can be found where?
The only place it's ever lived, which is at Jane Unseen on Instagram and Instagram only. And I promise when I start cutting up things, they'll be streaming for lovers over there too, even if you tell me no.
We'll
feel the fever.
You're the one who manages the social pages.
I'm trying. Yeah.
Okay.
The drop was perfect.
You can also check us out over at Blue Sky at filmphilosopherspodcast.social over there at that social page as well. This was a great episode and a great way to kick off the holiday season of winter and all the winter holidays. And we're so glad you were able to join us. So until next time, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
I'm managing intern manager Amy.
Class dismissed.
Hey, Bob.